Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. What are we smoking, Mike? Haha, I get you to say it again twice.
So today we are going to smoke the CAO L'Anniversaire Cameroon Robusto. And hopefully this is better than its Toro cousin, the 92 rated disappointment.
Yeah, this one's not rated, so you know it has to be good, right?
I'm not going to tell you a lie. I do not have high hopes for this cigar. I'm so disappointed. This might be the worst CAO cigar we've ever smoked. We'll have to cover
it. You know, I think it is, but I'm thinking that the Robusto might be a better performer at this price point and size and everything. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last episode with Jordan, but the smaller size might be a little more conducive to good flavors. I don't know. But we've also certainly had kind of the opposite where the Moontrans Cigarellos you're not a huge fan of, Mike. And the Torpedo we didn't like, but the Robusto is like the sweet spot.
Oh, the Robusto. The Moontrans Robusto is one in a million. That is just a fantastic cigar.
Yes.
Definitely comes with me every Christmas to hand out.
Yeah. I will say, at start, this one seems a little more nutty than the Toro and a little less spicy. I guess there's still some spice, but I'm getting a more prevalent kind of nutty flavor off of this one than I did the Toro.
I'm getting more spice and more nutty. Like, I'm getting more flavor overall.
Yeah.
Could be in my head, but I don't think so.
Well, only you are in your head, so nobody quite knows for sure. But I would agree with that. I was getting the nutty more, but as I was speaking, I tasted that spice. So it's definitely got both, but I think the nut is a little more forward than the spice. The spice is still there, but it's not the first thing you taste.
So what are you pairing yours with today?
Potentially. I am pairing mine again with the Bell's Oberon Eclipse Citrus Wheat. Usually if we're doing two cigars or multiple cigars out of the same lineup or same whatever, I try and keep my pairings as close as possible, as of late. I know I've definitely not done that in the past, so I'm not not trying to sit here and say, oh, I always keep everything exactly the same. But we're also not blind taste testing this for one quarter of the sticks, so.
I am pairing mine with the same thing as well. So I have a Sam Adams Oktoberfest and Vikra Straight Rye Whiskey, the Temperance River.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Which is wonderful. If any of the listeners get a chance to try any of the Vikra whiskeys, I would highly recommend it.
It is tasty. Making me wish I had some right now, Mike. Soon to be. Maybe. Potentially. Not now. But later. I wonder if I can get that down here in the cities.
You can get Honor Probably. Brand there for sure.
Okay.
I got this Temperance River from the distillery, which is in Canal Park. So
oh, yeah.
The next time you make your way up to my area, you can swing by and pick up a bottle. They didn't have any full-size bottles. This is like a 10th bottle, 375 mils, but sure. Very good.
Sure, sure. Can you believe we're almost at the season finale for season 3, Mike?
It's hard to believe. Hard to believe, you know? And our listener will find it hard to believe as well.
So... We still haven't decided when we're coming back with the season 4 premiere, but we have the cigar picked already. And if you're part of the stick list on our Patreon, you will know what that is and plenty of time to get that to smoke with us and enjoy it with us as you will. Our special is going to be extra special because our season 3 finale next week happens to come out on Christmas Day. So it's going to be a very festive and joyful occasion on the show. It's not only Christmas, but our season 3 finale. I'm looking forward to it. I'm quite excited.
I think
it's a topic we've been, yeah, and it's a topic Mike and I have been talking about doing for years now. And it's finally happening. Finally happening.
And it's one of my favorite seasonal topics to talk with people about.
Yes.
Because I like to stick the needles into certain people at Christmas time. Certain relatives that like to talk about this to the chagrin of my wife at parties.
Yeah, it'll definitely be one of those topics that if you're like Mike and myself and enjoy some of that needling, this next episode will be right up your alley. If you are more like our wives you'll probably just roll your eyes, shake your head, and say, well, par for the course for these two. But it should still be fun and interesting and entertaining, no matter your predilections. So agreed. Mike and I didn't really have a super concrete topic picked, but I have one that's a little bit more worked up, perhaps, than what Mike might have had. So we are going to talk about something, and we'll talk about it maybe less stat-based than a lot of other things we talk about. But I think, Mike, you'll appreciate this. It's going to encompass kind of a lot of different things. And I think it's a kind of a really good piggyback off of what Jordan talked about last episode. And I wanted to talk about kind of jobs. Not so much jobs, but I kind of want to talk about some maybe toxic traits of managers or sneaky things that companies do to try and gaslight their employees into thinking that they're bad. And more than that, I wanted to talk about kind of job hunting and job searching. And because we're a week away from Christmas, which means we're a week and a couple days away from the new year when a lot of people make resolutions and things, I want to talk about job searching because that's something I feel like after dieting and you know, swearing off online gambling or I don't know whatever else people might do, but getting a new job, a new career has to be up there in New Year's resolutions, doesn't it, Mike?
Oh, I would say that has to be one of the yearly goals of a significant part of the workforce. I know that I have almost always been looking for a job in my career, and I think Nate feels the same way. I think most people that work who are not, quote-unquote, at the top of the pile are searching to move up. So, yes.
So, and specifically with the searching for a new job, I wanted to talk about, is it or is it not more difficult to find a job nowadays, present time, as a white man than it is as any other demographic group?
That is spicy.
Oh, well, we only have one episode after this for our season three, so I thought let's bring some spice, let's ramp it up a little bit, and get into it. Do you have any initial opening thoughts, Mike? And I can share some initial opening thoughts, and then we'll kind of like look at some things. I've got some stuff up that we're going to talk about, but I was curious if you had any thoughts on that. I know we've talked off air.
Sure. I'd rather not make an opening statement.
Oh, no. This one's going to be spicier than most of our listeners might be accustomed to, perhaps.
Yeah, it's... I know that if you work for a large employer, like a corporation or any other large entity, they're going to have hiring criteria. And the Supreme Court has relatively recently ruled that they can no longer use race or gender as a qualification for job seeking. But for the entirety of our careers up to this point, it was definitely a factor. And there's been a lot of revelations in the news in the last couple months of large Hollywood studios explicitly hiring based on racial and gender characteristics.
Well, and Boeing and AAA video game studios.
Oh, yeah. It's any large entity, corporation or government entity. They have a weighted hiring system. And I know that I've assisted people with their applications. And if you look at the application, it usually has key points hidden in there, and it'll show you their scale. And then it's whether or not they have an additional scale for veteran status or for race or for gender. Yeah. And many large employers have that additional point system there. An inclination would be a disclaimer that they are veteran friendly or something of that nature.
Yes.
Yes.
Or if the, dare I say it, Mike, or if the recruiter has pronouns in their bio.
If you get an email from the job recruiter and they have their pronouns on their footer, on their email, it is definitely an organization that is using your indefinite or non-changeable characteristics as hiring criteria. Let's put it that way. in the interest of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Well, before we get into kind of some stuff, I would have to say that I agree with Mike, because I have been for the past, well, and we're recording this earlier than it comes out, but for the past, I don't know how many weeks, I've been applying to, let's say, you know, 5 to 10 jobs a week. And so far, I have not gotten any calls to interview or, you know, emails to have an interview. I will also say that the job search, the how the jobs work these days is ridiculous. It is crazy. And this site is not a sponsor, but this site is fantastic. I think it's fantastic. Of course, I haven't gotten a job yet, so I don't know how fantastic it is. But what it is, the site is called Resume from Space, and it's this guy, and he put together some AI tools. So you can upload your current resume, and you can pick a template for your resume, and you can have AI reword your sections of your resume and phrase things, you know, like the corporate lingo speak. So if you're not really good at that, then you can have this do it. And the part of this site that I like is it has an applicant tracking system portion where you take your resume that you've created through this site, you copy and paste the job listing you're trying to apply to, and it will give you the applicant tracking system score, which all companies use these days. You know, when you upload your resume and it autofills, it's using AI to scan all the stuff. And when you apply and then 15 minutes later, you get the auto rejection email. That's all AI stuff. Like no human being is looking at this. This is all, you're fighting the computers at this point, a la John Connor. But it will tell you your applicant tracking system score, and you want it to be above 70, but below 90. Because if you're above 90, then that is as suspicious as below 70 for some reason. So, but this will let you rework, and it will pull up the sections and the bits that you're missing, and you can have it autofill those things in, and you can revise it as much as you want and rerun the score and see where you kind of stack with the computer thing, right? So you gotta get through the computer gatekeeper before you can even hope to land on an actual human being's eyeballs.
Yes. And this is useful no matter what job you're applying for, even highly technical jobs where they're not going to use discriminatory practices most likely, right? They're going to hire somebody who's qualified, especially if there's not a lot of people who qualify for that job to begin with. So...
yeah. And a lot of times, as far as I know, and it's tough to say, but as far as I know, legally speaking, a lot of these companies would not have their AI trained to discriminate based on perceived gender of the applicant. And nowadays, I feel there's a lot more non-traditional names than there ever have been in the past. So a lot of times I don't know, in my current role, I don't know the gender of somebody, say, submitting a help case that I'm helping them resolve. And I might not know their gender at all unless I actually physically talk to them. Not that I would ask them their gender, because that's not allowable. And I don't really care anyway. But, you know, sometimes you get the names and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, that's got to be a whatever. Not that it matters, but, you know, people think things. So, and then sometimes I'll get it and it's completely opposite. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting name for whatever. So, not that it matters. I mean, that's the whole point. It doesn't really matter, and I don't care.
Oh, I am not saying that I personally agree with those hiring practices. I'm against it.
No. I'm just saying that I don't think they've trained their AI. Hired
solely on their qualifications for the role.
And yes, I agree.
Blending into a team is definitely part of that.
Well, yeah. I'm just trying to say that I don't think they've trained their AI models that are the first gatekeeper of your resume to look at names and assign a gender based upon that, because that would be quite easy to expose and then open them up to litigation. So I don't think their AI does that. But if you do get called for that first interview and you're not the gender, race, whatever that they're wanting to hire, and that's the thing, is any company can be like, nope, we're not hiring white men. We're not hiring black women. We're not hiring whatever. And they can say that internally to themselves, amongst themselves. But that's not the reason they're going to give you on the rejection email. They don't even give reasons anymore. They just say something like, thank you for your application. And while you are qualified, we found a candidate that is more qualified or whatever. Like they give you like a compliment and then they're like, we found somebody that's better. But they never tell you the reason, because it's the same with being fired. If you get fired, they're not going to tell you you're fired because they hate your guts. They're going to say something that they can't be prosecuted for or whatever, right?
Well, of course, yeah. They can't legally tell you if it was discriminatory.
Yeah, so likely you'll never know. You can have your suspicions. But I want to talk about what you brought up, Mike. Hiring based on skill or proficiency.
Immutable characteristics, I believe, is the term we're looking for.
Okay. So I've got this article up from the New York Times, and I've heard of this. I've heard of this happening or this new shift. And it's not what you think, Mike. Or maybe it is what you think, but it's not the industry you're thinking of. So when we're talking about orchestras and musicians, I don't... Mike, did you ever play an instrument?
No.
Okay. So I grew up playing trombone, and I've dabbled in piano and stuff like that. For a lot of these orchestras and stuff, they've been doing to try and combat racism or perceived racism, they have instituted something called a blind audition. So the person playing will go behind a screen so the people actually doing the audition can't see the gender or race of the musician. Musician plays and then leaves. And there's a whole big thing where they were saying, well, the person should walk in and then the judges should come in, because if it's a female and they're walking in high heels, they could hear the high heels and assume it's a woman. They wouldn't be able to assume race, but, you know, and so they were trying to make this as impartial as possible, right?
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it makes sense until having the best sounding orchestra is not your ultimate goal anymore. So this New York Times article from 2020. The headline is, to make orchestras more diverse, end blind auditions. If ensembles are to reflect the communities they serve, the audition process should take into account race, gender, and other factors. Which is the opposite of what they were trying to do with blind auditions. They were trying to make it more diverse by getting rid of racial prejudice, and now to make it more diverse, they want to make it more prejudice? But isn't the point of an orchestra to sound good?
It sounds like they want to be racist. That's all I'm saying.
It literally says that.
Yeah, yeah.
The process should take into account race, gender, and other factors. Let's call it what it is. If you want to be a racist organization, but I think that's the big difference is, are you forcing diversity? Because I don't think anybody's saying that diverse musicians are somehow less talented than non-diverse musicians. But they want their orchestra to look a certain way, when really an orchestra is about sounding a certain way. Unless I'm really confused about how music works.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about orchestra music. But
you know about music, right?
That the ability to play your instrument with other people would be the determining factor about whether or not you should be in the orchestra or not.
Yeah. So apparently during the summer of 1969... there were two black musicians who accused the New York Philharmonic of discrimination. They're two cellists, a cellist and a bassist, said they'd been rejected for positions due to their race. The city's Commission on Human Rights didn't find in favor of the musicians, but found that aspects of the orchestra's hiring system was kind of like an old boys group and were discriminatory. So they then went on to do the blind auditions. So what happened was the blind auditions actually helped increase the percentage of women in orchestras, which was around 6% in 1970. And in 2020, women make up about a third of the Boston Symphony Orchestra and half of the New York Philharmonic. But apparently that was not enough, because orchestras are the nation's least racially diverse institutions, especially in regard to black and Latino artists. And I don't know, Mike, but I feel like orchestras and symphonies and things of that nature are very, very European. And I don't know how many blacks and Latinos were in Europe at the time that orchestras and quartets and trios and things of that nature and the classical music, like, that's very European in my opinion. I could be wrong.
I know that there is a strong Latino background in orchestral and classical music, because when the major pieces, classical pieces, were being written, which is like the turn of two centuries ago. Yeah. They had major cities in Latin America that had large colonial powers. So there were people writing music in Colombia and Brazil and Mexico. So there are classical pieces written by most likely individuals of a European background in South America. Yeah. So I'm going to guess there's probably a similar situation in Africa, probably in colonial cities. They do have classical influences there with composers who were born in the colonies, likely of European origin. So it's not traditional African or indigenous music.
Yeah, I mean, it's not shocking, right? A European music form has predominantly European musicians. I don't know how many like reggae bands have European performers in them. Bob Marley and the Wailers wasn't a group of white dudes, as far as I know.
Yeah, it's not 1930s Americana. It's not a diverse group necessarily.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're not talking about the folk blues music that existed before modern country, right?
Yeah. Well, to some extent, right? Like, well, and that's why you have ska, I guess, to include like the reggae, but into more or less diverse musicianship or something. Like, there's all these different forms of music. And this is just talking about like orchestras. And predominantly throughout history, like the orchestra, as far as I know, we can look it up, was a European musical form. Like Mozart and Beethoven and Bach and
Tchaikovsky and
So I mean, right here it's like ancient Greece, where orchestra comes from a Greek part of the stage where the instruments and chorus perform, and then China and Indonesia and Italy, the Czech Republic, not a lot of, you know, like Latin or African places. And it looks like 1600 in Italy, Claudio Monteverdi started forming kind of combinations that eventually morphed into the modern orchestra. So it's not like it's the kind of thing where if it were an invention of Africans or Latinos or even fully, you know, Chinese or Japanese, and white people started to do it, it would be deemed cultural appropriation. But because white people are playing white people music, and it's not diverse enough, we have to force more diverse people in there. And it's one of those things where, is it really, like this New York Times article is talking about police brutality against Black Americans. And like, what does that have to do with music? Like, what does that have to do with orchestras? It doesn't, to me, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you put that on an orchestra? And now you did blind auditions because you wanted to not have any bias from the people giving the audition, and that worked. It ended up increasing the amount of female performers, but it didn't increase the amount of diverse musicians. Is that because diverse musicians would rather play their own music or not play orchestra music? Or maybe there are large, I mean, I don't know enough about orchestras and musicians, you know, classical musicians, to know how many are actually auditioning and trying to get in.
Right. I'm going to guess that there's probably a lot of Indians from India who play classical music, but they probably also play classical Indian music. So if you're going to put it together orchestra to play classical Indian songs, you're probably going to have a lot of Indians there. Probably not a lot of people who are Europeans. Probably not a whole lot of people from Detroit that play the sitar. Just going to guess. Don't know that for a fact.
Well, I mean, really? No. Yeah. I mean, that's right. It's just kind of mind-boggling that for something like music, where you have to have a mastery of the instrument and be able to play with others, play in time, what have you, have the technique, you want people that have those things. So a blind audition lets you find people that have those things with no preference to gender or race. And that's not me saying that non-white musicians don't have talent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that likely there are fewer of those musicians auditioning, perhaps. I don't know for sure. But I mean, like, how many times have you looked at an orchestra playing, Mike, and thought, gee, I just don't like the ethnic makeup of this orchestra? Like, you're not really looking at one person unless it's, oh, we're bringing in this super awesome French horn musician, and they're going to be, you know, for one or two songs, they're going to be kind of center stage. Otherwise, it's an ensemble type of thing. So it has to sound good together.
Interestingly enough, Nate, I just got done, and we spoke about it. I sent you a text. watching a live performance of classical music. And yes. There were Asian people and white people, maybe some Latinos.
Okay.
But there were no African Americans as a part of the ensemble that we watched. I cannot guarantee any Latinos, but I do know there were some Asian people and some white people. And there were Europeans and Americans both. I didn't think about it until you started talking about the topic, and I was like, oh, who was there? Blah, 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 blah. And of course, it was a performance of a Russian piece. So culturally, it makes sense that there's going to be a lot of Asian people and a lot of European people doing the production, right?
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of Russian names on that paper bill.
Yeah.
Doing the Russian performance. Shocking, I know.
Yes. How dare they?
How dare they? And some of the Russian names might have been some of the Asian people also, because Russia, of course, is a Eurasian empire. So that wouldn't be surprising at all.
Yes.
But you and I are in the same boat because I think that everything should be based on performance. Yeah. And I'm in an industry where things are based on numbers, not on any other factor. So nobody cares. And I know I've used this example before because of a certain listener we have, but nobody gives a shit if your plumber comes over and they have purple hair and a nose ring that's the size of a beer bottle.
Mm-hmm.
They just want their issue fixed. So if you're in an industry that's based on results, like music, hopefully, right? Orchestral music specifically, you would be focused on performance and nothing else. So
One would think. If you have two musicians who practice equally, were trained equal at everything, I can assure you that if I close my eyes and listen to the music they're playing, I would not be able to discern their gender, race, creed, belief system, sexual preference, or any of that stuff. Because you either play the notes or you don't. You know what I mean? So, and I was in a jazz band in college. And there were black Africans in the jazz band in college. There were all sorts of people in the jazz band in college. But jazz is an American kind of like fusion music thing, right? They took all sorts of things to make jazz. And there have been countless diverse jazz musicians and countless, I don't really like the term non-diverse, but like, you know, countless white jazz musicians. So I think the style of music has a lot to do with it, because why would somebody who's not of European descent give two craps about an orchestra piece written by some Russian guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's going to be self-selection. Jazz is a great example. It's an American art form, largely in lounges, well-known to be a black-dominated, American black population-dominated art form with white and Asian influences and Hispanic influences as well. You know, Americans, there's probably not going to be a lot of Aboriginal Australian jazz musicians.
Yeah,
there's just not.
Or like Inuit.
Right. There's probably not going to be a lot of jazz musicians who are from Samoa.
Yeah.
Just because of the style of music. There's musicians from Samoa who are extremely talented, but they're not playing jazz, right? That's kind of like if you go see a show of Mississippi Delta blues, probably not going to see a lot of people from Japan playing Mississippi Delta blues.
Probably not.
Probably not.
But I mean, that's the thing, is this is talking about orchestral blind auditions. And if the orchestra pieces are not part of your heritage or part of your background or part of whatever, you're likely not going to want to be in an orchestra. Now, that's not to say that the blind process is perfect or whatever, or that people that aren't represented in orchestras are not talented musicians. But it's kind of one of those things where, are we looking for people that play orchestra music, or are we looking, that's the weird thing, is are we looking for performance, or are we looking on these shallow things, you know, like skin color and gender and whatever, which is exactly what the blind audition was supposed to do away with. And it did for male to female percentages. So I don't know. We'd have to look up stats on like how many, like what's the percentage of non-European heritage musicians auditioning for orchestras, and what percentage of those get in, I guess. if we wanted to go and do like a full true deep dive into this. And this is mostly meant to be as kind of like a litmus test, you know, like with orchestras, the looks don't matter. And by and large, with a lot of like rock bands or pop bands or anything else, the looks really don't matter. I mean, you've seen Steven Tyler.
Right. Or if you're in the pit, let's say, nobody's looking at you specifically most of the time. Yeah. So even they probably have a dress code. Every orchestra I've seen has a dress code.
Oh, yes, of course.
But I don't think they have a specific hairstyle or anything. You know, when I ran a service truck, I had to look a certain way. And I understood that, and I wanted a job running a service truck, so I shaved my face, and I cut my hair, and I wore a hat. And I didn't wear earrings, and, you know, like, I had to look a certain way. But that's a totally different environment than an orchestra, where nobody cares what the piano player looks like, and nobody cares what one of 10 violinists are. Nobody cares.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, by and large, I mean, you're not going to an orchestra to look and do a tally of races represented.
No, you're not going there to hear the boomer ladies talk and eat food either. But that's a conversation for a different day.
Yeah. So I think, and I just want to do that one because it's like, you would think like an orchestra would be the most benign thing ever because you just have to play good music. But apparently they weren't diverse enough. And then they introduced blind auditions, which made them more diverse. But then the blind auditions led to, surprise, surprise, more European orchestral people in there, but different genders, so not the right races that some person wants somewhere. And that's kind of been, so I've been applying to all these jobs, and I've had some internal interviews, and it's just that I haven't gotten anything different. And I know that Mike and I have talked about the hidden scale, you know, so you get bonus points for being non-white, for being non-male, for having a disability, for being a veteran, for any of these other things. And those are like bonus points, and you can only earn so many of those as a white man.
Right, and this goes back to transmaxing. And
yes.
Is it beneficial to say that you have a handicap? Is it beneficial to say that you have an alternative gender or sexuality? Because some of these job applications have you put those identifiers in. And if you are like me and you say, refuse to answer, they know the answer.
Yeah. Right. And not answering is an answer in and of itself.
It is.
And I guess because, so Mike, how much of your cigar do you have left?
I was actually going to wait for an opening to ask you because I'm a little over halfway.
Okay. I've got like, I don't know, an inch and a quarter left.
I have about two and a half inches left, right around there.
Okay. So I've been smoking a little faster than you. So far, this one is much better than the Toro, I think.
So far, this is not even the same cigar.
No, not at all.
It's spicy.
Yeah.
It has that nuttiness. Still that full flavor smoke. No sourness at all. It's not hot.
Nope.
It's a great Cameroon style cigar. I really like it. Maybe the Robustos are ruining our palates, but I prefer this significantly more over the Toro.
Yes, 100%. I agree with you. So we're going to dip briefly into spicy territory, and then we're going to dip right back out of it. So according to Resume Builder, in November of 2022, 1 in 6 hiring managers have been told to stop hiring white men. And their opening paragraph is, many companies have made the connection that DEI is not only good for society, but also good for business. And so they did a poll. They surveyed 1,000 hiring managers across the United States. 52% of those believe their company practices reverse discrimination in hiring. 1 in 6 have been asked to deprioritize hiring white men. 48% have been asked to prioritize diversity over qualifications. 53% believe their job will be in danger if they don't hire enough diverse employees, and 70% believe their company has DEI initiatives for appearances' sake.
So this might get cut, but when I hear or see DEI, or a DEI officer, or the Office of Inclusion, or the director of this and that, when I hear diversity, I hear exclude whites. When I hear equity, I hear create a system where we have no equality amongst our workers. And when I hear inclusion, I hear exclude men. I don't hear good things. Those are bad. Those are signifiers of badness. And
yeah, they're all bad connotations.
Racism and prejudice is what I hear.
Yes.
I don't view it as a social good. And I think that large corporations are, they're feeling the repercussions from that, including militaries as well, government yeah. institutions. I believe that New Zealand just had another ship sink, the first ship that sank since the end of World War II. And they have five captains who are women, and four of them have crashed the ships. Yes. Not that that's, and that's kind of unfair to the ladies who were captaining those ships. I don't know all the situations, obviously. But,
no, and it could very much be similar to the kind of media sensationalism around the most recent Olympics, where some female boxers were believed to be trans just based on appearance alone, when in fact they weren't. And they've competed in previous Olympics. So you also hear, you know, to your point, Mike, is you also hear about diversity hiring. And when you have stats like, what did I say? 48%. That's almost half of hiring managers have been asked to prioritize diversity over qualifications. So if you want to hire diverse people, do that, but please make sure that they have the qualifications, because I assure you there are diverse people out there that have the same qualifications as a white candidate. White people are not special. There are diverse people that have the same qualifications. So don't hire based solely on diversity. Please make sure they have the qualifications. And I think Boeing has found that out. For sure, a lot of the video game studios are finding that out as we speak, as all of their things tank. I think Disney is finally realizing that as they've pulled a lot of their planned Star Wars shows and movies, and they've canceled a lot of their Star Wars shows and series that were specifically designed to make white men uncomfortable.
Yes, and I would like to add in here, I have worked with diverse people, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I work in a very technical field, and those people who were quote-unquote diverse were extremely qualified and were hired based on those qualifications.
Yes.
In fact, some of the individuals who are quote-unquote diverse are the experts in their field, and it doesn't do them as individuals any justice to hire based on diversity. Those people that I'm thinking of in my mind that I worked with are highly qualified, and they would be offended if you were to say they were a diversity hire or something, yeah. because they certainly weren't. They're 100% qualified and capable individuals. And if you were to ask them, I would bet that they would say that you should always hire the most qualified candidate every time, because yes. they are highly qualified and competent individuals that are an asset to the organizations that they work for. So it hurts the people who are there to say you're hiring based on diversity. It hurts the people that are already there and working and
yeah.
doing kick-ass work. You know what I mean? It's kind of fair.
It's a slap in the face to anybody who's diverse, who has the skills, that was hired based on skills, to say you're hiring now solely based on diversity and not skills, because then it is.
It's a slap like in the face, and it delegitimizes their accomplishments, and that's highly
and
unfair.
Their hard work to get to where they are.
Yeah. The people that I've worked with who are not white men are extremely qualified, and I was happy to work for them and with them. So it had nothing to do with their characteristics other than expertise at the job. So, yeah, it offends my sensibility to say that you're going to hire somebody because of their whatever factor that isn't being competent, because of
factors that I thought we outlawed hiring based upon, but I guess it only swings one way.
Right. Yeah. Like, you hire the best person, and the people that are there are going to be competent. That should be the way it is. There shouldn't even be a question about it.
There shouldn't be. Not really. No. I've never had an issue with a competent person. Let me just put it that way. I've never had an issue with a competent person. And if I did, it was something that was very easily and quickly resolved through communication, respectful on both sides. I've only ever had issues with incompetent people, and that's regardless of race or gender. I've only ever had issues with incompetent people. I've never had an issue with a competent person.
Right. And there's plenty of lazy workers out there that shouldn't have their jobs that
yes.
has nothing to do with anything other than their work performance. So
no, because the incompetent people have been all genders and all races, and the competent people have been all genders and all races.
Right. It's almost like your immutable characteristics have nothing to do with your ability to perform intellectual tasks.
Yes. Yes.
It's almost like it's... like you should be judged by the content of your character instead of the color of your skin.
Yes.
I think that Martin Luther King, friend of the show, said that.
Yeah, didn't he have a dream or something?
I believe so. I think he even had his memorial in Washington.
Well, you know what? Soon they'll be tearing his memorial down because it's hate speech or something.
Yeah, it's wrong think.
All right. So I did want to touch briefly on traits of toxic managers because I am 100% convinced that at my work, they're trying very hard to manage me out. Have you heard of managing out, Mike?
Yes, I have. Is that similar to quiet firing?
Yep. And I actually spoke up on a call in a training that I was on where they were talking about, well, how do you prevent your employees from quiet quitting? And I said, excuse me. I will never, ever blame the victims. There is no quiet quitting. There's quiet firing. And that shut everybody up real quick. But the quiet firing and managing out is basically making the workplace so inhospitable that the person you're trying to get rid of quits so they can't collect unemployment instead of firing them. So in terms of managing out, they will give you a fuck ton of tasks, zero support, and crazy metrics you need to hit, but you have no support. So when you miss them, then they can say, well, your performance isn't up to par, even if your performance can't ever possibly hit what their expectations are because it's ridiculous, which is why they're doing it to you.
Yeah.
So that's a bad one. And that's what I feel that my current job is doing to me and why I've been applying to so many different other jobs. And I've brought up the fact that I haven't been trained in all these things they want me to do, and there's no support and things like that. And then the next thing they do, what do they do when you bring that up? Mike, do you have a guess? Gaslighting.
Gaslighting you. I love that term. That is something that came in the lexicon that is, I appreciate it.
Yes. So they're trying to make me feel like I'm bad because I can't do the ridiculous things they ask by saying other people can do the ridiculous things that I can do, but the numbers don't lie and I'm doing better than anybody else despite not hitting what they want me to hit. And when I bring up somebody else, I'm told to not worry about that somebody else. Because they have other issues in play, which is fine. Like, I'm not supposed to know somebody's personal life. I don't want to know my coworker's personal life. But can you do your job or not? That's what it comes down to. So gaslighting is a big one where they get you to believe, or they're trying to get you to believe, that the problem is all with you and that they're not trying to manage you out or get you to or quiet fire you, which is all to protect the company's bottom line. In the long run, they don't give two fucks about you. Even if they keep you, they don't give a shit. You're less expensive to keep than you are to get rid of, I guess, or than you are to replace. So that's one. There's a couple other traits of toxic managers we'll go through. Micromanagement, lack of communication, unrealistic expectations. The manager takes all the credit, even if you do all the work. They'll blame you for things, even if you have no part in doing it. And they show very clear favoritism. They lack empathy. They try to avoid conflict in anything. So I had a very terrible one-on-one with my boss, and she was asking if I did something, and I said, no, I didn't do that. And she goes, why did you tell me you got it done? And I said, well, you told me to ignore everything, and then you told me to check it off, so I did. And she's like, well, that's not how it goes. And I was like, why not? And she's like, well, do you think that's right? And why would you do that? And I said, well, I did it because I hoped everybody was going to forget about the task and we could move on with our lives. And she really kind of hated that, but she didn't say anything about it. So whatever. Avoid that conflict, right?
I've been so lucky in my career. Outside of a few employers based on my job requiring me to look a certain way, which I followed. I've been judged completely on performance, and I've had very good management who wanted successful employees and wanted everybody to succeed and gave us plenty of opportunities to do so if we chose to do so. So I, like I say, you and I have talked about this outside of the show, and I've had a very fortunate run thus far with management. I've always had fairly free rein on what I want to do and the ability to perform my job as I see fit without interference. So I sympathize with all the people out there listening and Nate who have managers who are not particularly good. I cannot comprehend working for somebody who is micromanaging or is trying to get rid
of you. Well, to be fair, I'm a little sassier than the average employee, and I have a very low tolerance for incompetent managers, especially when that manager is trying to get on a pulpit and say they're the best leader of all time, and they confuse leadership with management, and they're terrible at leadership, and they're bad at management, and they're saying that they're a leader. I'm like, they're not synonymous. Those two terms, they're not the same thing. You can be a great leader, but a terrible manager. You can be a terrible manager. You have to be a good leader. You don't have to be. But if you're a good leader, everything else kind of falls into place. But yeah, and so one of the other ones here is demanding authority and then always right. And I had a conversation where I was questioning one of the assignments or one of the tasks, and I said, I feel like that should go to this other person on this hierarchy that you've created. And my manager's response was, well, I have a whole slide showing that that's your responsibility. And I said, well, I don't agree with you. I think you're wrong. And then she looked at me like I was poking the sleeping bear or something. And I said, but I don't have to agree with you to get my job done. And I can still do the tasks and not agree with you. Like, my agreement with you doesn't have anything to do with the task getting done. I'm just telling you, I don't think you're correct in this assessment, but I don't have to think you're correct. So, you know what I mean? Like, I was trying to be sassy for sure. Mike always calls me out on being sassy, but, you know, like, but I don't have to agree, but I can still call you out on it. Like, I don't think that's the right call. But I'll do it because I'm bound if I want to stay employed, right?
Well, of course. And like I say, I've always had great direct managers. At least...
I wonder what that's like.
At least after leaving the school districts, right? Yeah. School districts are totally the same. It was awful. But in the electrical industry, my direct supervisors have always been great. Even the supervisor of my supervisors have been great. A couple times the top level management has been a little questionable. But fortunately, the management between them and me mitigated whatever nonsense they were trying to do. It helps when your lead engineer is a highly competent person and they just kind of mitigate whatever their supervisor says, like kind of divert it off.
Well, in a government job is a little different, especially in your industry, because you're either good at it or you fucking die, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So corporate America is different. In corporate America, you have to do the plans within plans within plans to protect your ass at all times.
Yeah, at least I work in an industry where safety is number one priority, so.
Yeah. In the electrician industry, they must do a lot of blind auditions.
Yeah, it's...
Here's a sparking live wire. Fix it. I don't care what you look like. Go.
Pretty much. We don't care what you sound like. We don't care what you look like.
You hear the Wilhelm scream and smell burnt flesh. I guess we're not going to hire that one.
Do you have the certification or do you not?
Yeah, pretty much. So, Mike, I'm actually literally burning my fingers. I almost, like, I took a puff and it burnt my finger and I almost flung the cigar, like, into the air to try and cool my finger down. How much do you have left?
I have about an inch left. But we can be done because you're done.
Well, sure. I don't. Do you have any other kind of like a hiring things? I mean, I'm not really trying to complain about hiring, but since Christmas and the new year and everything is kind of coming up, if you're looking for a job, some of this stuff is important to understand the modern current landscape of jobs. And one is you're not even really competing with other candidates. You're competing against the computer that's reading your resume and assigning it a score.
Right. And I don't have a lot to say. I've been very isolated in the market since I joined the electrical industry. I've only really been applying for positions in my field within a field within a field, so to speak. So I'm very specialized now, even more so than I was 5 years ago. And even 5 years ago, I was specialized. I was specialized before I got even 8 years ago. So I've been working my way to a needle point, so to speak, where they just have to hire whoever is the most qualified because it's so niche. Let's put it that way. It's such a niche market that they have to hire the people who are there because there's only so many that can do the job anyway. So yeah,
for sure.
I'm spoiled. I've spoiled myself, I guess.
Well, by design.
By design, yeah. By design.
And that's part of it is you have to have, especially in corporate America, you have to cover yourself at all times multiple ways because, you know, HR is not there to help you.
HR is not your friend. HR is not your friend.
Yes. So you have to do other things to make yourself irreplaceable or untouchable or things like that. So, and like Mike said, leaving your race and gender and everything off of the applications, even though they're quote unquote optional questions, non-required questions, if you don't answer them, they will just assume what you are.
They know. They know. I've been answering no answer for probably 15 years. I don't know, probably longer than that, probably 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a political statement. They know what your attitude is coming into the interview, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Which in my line of work is perfectly acceptable, but.
Yeah, but in a lot of corporate America, it is not, so.
No. So what are your thoughts on the cigar, Nate?
Well, fingers burning. I really liked it. This one was so different than the Toro. So different.
Oh, it was wildly different. I thought it
was crazy different.
Spicy and nutty throughout. There was a little bit of sourness, maybe with an inch and a half left, but that quickly left. There was like one or two sour notes, and it immediately left, and it became just deeper and nuttier towards the end. You know? It really, I really thought it worked well.
Yeah. I gave it a 4.5. We'll see what Mike gives it to see if I change my opinion. I liked it. It was really good. It was very different than the Cameroon. The Cameroon Toro.
Yeah.
I smoked it until my fingers burned, and then I smoked it a little bit more, and I put it out when I couldn't physically smoke it. So, and I don't do that. I don't do that with a lot of the cigars we smoke. So,
yeah, I ranked it as a 4 only because I did have a couple sour notes. It was very good, and I would recommend people trying the Robusto.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a medium cigar, not typically what we smoke, but I appreciated it. I thought it was good. Definitely better than the Robusto. That was terrible.
You mean the Toro?
Oh yeah, the Toro. My bad.
Yeah. Nope. It's all good. it's weird because the Toro for the first half, if it would have kept that up, it would have been a really good as this one potentially. But even the first half of the Toro didn't really taste anything like this one, which is strange because it's the same line or the same.
Well, yeah, it's the same wrapper and it's the same filler, but that different size, that different gauge and the length makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And I thought it was much better, a much better cigar.
Yeah, a lot and better, yeah.
It doesn't stick out to me as one of the best sticks we've smoked, but it's better than what we've been smoking lately, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, and it's not what we normally smoke, but I don't normally smoke a lot of them until my fingers burn either. So even though it's not what we typically gravitate towards, I think this one's a very solid cigar. And worth a try, even if you don't particularly like the medium-bodied or Cameroons or whatever, what have you. But this one is solid throughout. Oh, I might have had one puff or a puff and a half that might have been sour. But by and large, this one was very good. It was nutty and spicy, so it was kind of a great mix of what we look for in Connecticut's and what we look for in Maduro's. And it was kind of a really nice middle ground of those two meeting in one stick. So I really like this one. Would not hesitate to recommend it. If you wanted to try something, if this is your wheelhouse, give it a try. If it's not your wheelhouse, try it anyway because you might like it.
Yeah, if you see it in a cigar shop and you want to smoke something different, I would suggest it. It's unique. I think it's good.
Yes, I agree. And I think closing thoughts on our topic is believe in yourself. Don't take the rejections too personally because it's really just a computer sending you the rejection email. It has nothing to do with you as a person or your skills or your traits or anything like that. It is literally just an AI program spitting something out. And this is, for better or worse, my current manager was auto-declined for the role, but they personally knew the next person up the chain and wanted to have lunch with them, and that's what got her the job as my manager. So the computers knew she wasn't qualified.
The more you know.
The more you know. But yeah, I mean, you're fighting computers. It has nothing to do really with you as a person or you as your skills. Check out Resume from Space. If you want some AI help, they have a free version, and then there's a annual, I think it's like $10 for the year to get. And it doesn't auto-renew, so you know, hopefully within a year you could find a new job. But they've got some really good tools to kind of peel back the layers or open the curtain so you can see the little man running the Wizard of Oz thing. Otherwise, stay tuned next week for our season finale, Christmas Day. Exciting stuff. Give us a follow on Instagram. Check us out on Facebook. Back us on Patreon. That would make Mike and my holiday all the better. And thanks for listening, as always.
Be safe, have fun.